and introduce the governor's recommendations for capital investment. I just want to note, before we get going, with me is Marianne Conboy, no stranger to the committee. She's our capital budget coordinator at MMB, as well as Assistant Commissioner Jen Hassmer, who's Assistant Commissioner and responsible for the debt management for the state. So we're happy to be here. Today, I'm going to go through a couple of things. One, I'm going to just give you a quick overview of the capital budget process, discuss the growing needs for infrastructure, talk about projects and how they're updated from 22 to 23, provide an overview of the governor's infrastructure plan, and then finally just walk through the capital budget financing so you understand it. So it should be a good overview for the committee, a good introduction. What we intend to do is then follow through with individual and more specific discussions of agency recommendations, so you get a feeling and understanding of the strategy at each of the agencies. This will give you an overarching understanding of how we got to this point. So let's start with the overview of the capital budget process and these recommendations. It's a significant process. It is not an accident that these proposals get to you. It follows a lot of work from people within state agencies and local governments and MMB, as well as the legislature. MMB collects information for the capital budget following a statutorily defined process, which is open for agencies and political subdivisions whose capital projects are generally eligible for general obligation bonds. Requests are developed in an odd number of years and published with the governor's recommendations in January on even-numbered calendar years. So the process is all facilitated by MMB. This is all a process that's set up in Minnesota statute. This slide just gives you a reminder of the work leading up to last session, when we were normally sort of expected to look at and review a significant bonding bill. After MMB opened its capital budget system to receive requests, we hosted Q&A sessions. We provided instructions and assistance to agencies and political subdivisions as they submitted requests. The governor, lieutenant governor, MMB, we all went on bonding tours, even in the COVID time, to across the state, conducted meetings and reviewed projects. And we also took in other sort of more informal input. The governor's public comments survey for local projects got 778 comments, all received by the fall of 2021. When developing these recommendations, projects were evaluated on factors such as matching funds, if the project is ready to go, how urgent the project is, and alignment with the governor and lieutenant governor's One Minnesota vision, including a more equitable Minnesota. And in 2022, January of 2022, about a year ago, these governor's recommendations were all published and provided to the legislature. Unfortunately, as you all well know, no bonding bill was enacted last year, so we're back. And it's for a very important purpose. There's a growing demand for infrastructure in our state. In this last process, nearly $5.5 billion of requests were received from state agencies and political subdivisions. $5.5 billion. This is 10% higher than the total requests just 2 years previously, and did not include projects that weren't submitted through the MMB process. So the total number of projects is even greater. Since project information was last collected statewide to prepare for the 2022 budget, it is also important to consider how these project costs and updates change over time. So we're going to go to the next piece, which is, you know, the recommendations, really the list of projects is the same as what you saw last year with only a few minor changes. But the costs have changed. That delay in the time is important. Inflation has been a challenge to the construction industry, and the costs of building, materials, labor, and construction increase. All of those costs have increased over the last year. When requests are submitted through MMB, they select whether to include their own inflation estimate or whether they're asking MMB to utilize our own internal inflation schedule. If they do that, then we will include those and adjust the governor's recommendations accordingly. MMB asked agencies with their 2022 recommendations, did the timeline change as well? Because that delay also impacts when they can start proceeding. Did the scope change? And did inflation impact costs? For those who used MMB's inflation schedule in 2022, we factored in the project updated midpoint of construction costs, applied that to a new inflation schedule, developed with professional construction management firm. So just in case you're wondering, it's not like me or Mary Ann sat in the back and tried to figure out what's the CPI. And this is a management firm that deals with these costs in great detail. For those who updated their inflation estimate in 2022, we asked for their updated costs. This information was reviewed and included in the governor's recommendations. So in short, the governor's recommendations accounted for inflation and were specific. It wasn't a generalized inflation cost. It was specific to those particular projects. We found that in average, the project's midpoint construction was pushed out a year because of the delay in the bonding bill. And with that factored in, total project costs are now just about 20% higher. I'll take you to the next slide then, if there's no questions. We'll be walking through the governor's infrastructure plan at a high level.
Commissioner, Representative Erdahl has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Commissioner Showalter. First of all, I did miss you over the weekend, and hope we can. We've been talking fairly often lately. And one of our topics has been inflation. And just for the edification of those listening to this, you said the inflation rate for construction is 20%. Would you help us out by how did you determine 20%?
Commissioner yes. Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, great question. And I mentioned we got basically a construction management organization that deals with a regular basis projects, trying to understand at a specific level how materials and other things would be changing. Some costs go higher depending on the project. That may be a bigger factor or maybe a lesser factor. In other places, it might be labor or site preparation. So those things all vary by project, so we adjusted each individually, but on average, it's about 20%. So as you go through them, you'll see that some projects are more than 20% and others are less.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Showalter, thank you for that. There have been no questions about it, so I appreciate your clarification.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, on that 20%, what are you finding? Is it labor or materials? Or do you have a sense of what the 20%, what are you finding right now?
Mr. Showalter.
Great question, Mr. Chair. Representative, I'll start and I'll hand it over to Mary Ann Conboy, who's been working on those specific information. Certainly materials has been a big cost because you know we're seeing that impact across the board. But I'll let her go into a little bit more detail.
Please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, I'm Mary Ann Conboy. I'm the Capital Budget Coordinator at MNB. And yes, we have, in consulting with a construction management firm, it's labor, it's construction materials, and it's also construction equipment that have all increased in cost. And those three factors are developed into a specific adjustment made for Minnesota's construction economy.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's great. Thank you.
Please proceed, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. So on this, I'll start just walking through the governor's infrastructure plan. As I said before, this will be at a high level. We'll go through specific recommendations with the state agencies as we go through further. The 2023 recommendations mirror the 2022 recommendations in terms of projects and programs included. A small handful were removed just because of the updated information from the requesters. EV charging infrastructure funding moved from the operating recommendations to MnDOT. And as mentioned before, updated project costs were included. Grant programs and asset preservation programs were increased by 20% in order to provide funds to accomplish roughly the same work that was included in 2022. On the next slide, you see here the governor's infrastructure plan being $3.3 billion on all funds and is summarized into five major categories: asset preservation, community and equity, housing and homelessness, environmental stewardship, and roads, bridges, and water systems. I'm going to walk through these categories in the coming slides. A unique aspect of bonding bills is how funds for programs and local projects also are just one piece of the puzzle. We sort of talked about this on the side in previous years as well, that overall, the governor's $3.3 billion infrastructure plan is estimated to leverage an additional more than $2 billion in other funds, such as federal funds, local funds, and private funds for investments in these projects. So while the these recommendations are important and critical is also just recognize that this is even a greater investment in Minnesota, that the infrastructure would grow by more than the $3.3 billion we're recommending, by more than a $2 billion of other participants on these projects. In the governor's recommendations, most of the matching funds for the federal infrastructure are coming from the IIJA, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. But a lot of those recommendations are in the operating budget, not in the materials that you see before you here. One essential component is in the capital budget, and that's the $41 million that's included in the PFA recommendations. That's for the state's clean water and drinking water revolving funds. The amount decreased from last session due to updated estimates from the PFA, and this $41 million in GO bonds will unlock $92 million in regular EPA funds and $206 million in IIJA funds. Also in this presentation, as we move along, MnDOT will discuss some potential IIJA impacts not included on this table.
Commissioner, before you proceed, so looking at the graph, the note says that for the capital budget, it's $91 million, and so where's the other 50? And I'm assuming is that the trunk highway bonds, and would that be in transportation then? I'm reading the subtotal.
The transportation on the operating side. Yeah, Mr. Chair, for your question, you almost caught us. It is the $41 million that you see on this table, as well as the $50 million in transportation funding that's on the operating budget side.
Thank you, Commissioner. Please proceed.
We've got that nearly 40% of this recommendation package. It really is directed towards fixes and improving existing facilities through asset preservation programs and renewal projects. I think members of this committee, this is no surprising theme. It's a majority of it's a major priority, and it's just a consistent theme of these capital investment bills. Looking at the asset preservation funding alone, in the 2020 bonding bill, which was the largest ever enacted, only $169 million went to asset preservation programs at the state agencies or higher education institutions. So even as we get larger bills, asset preservation remains a smaller or a modest fraction of that amount. This recommendation from the governor includes $646 million in asset preservation recommendations. In addition, it introduces general fund cash for some of its funding, which gives agencies more flexibility than GO bonds and allows them to do things like building automation or security systems in their asset preservation projects all at one time. More funding and consistent funding are really needed for asset preservation to keep up with the backlog. We build new, but then we need to keep taking care. And right now, state agencies have a deferred maintenance of about $1.9 billion. Minnesota State's higher education institutions estimate that they have a backlog of $1.4 billion on top of the 1.9. And on top of both of those figures, the University of Minnesota has an estimate of $2.3 billion of backlog. So the asset preservation needs are real, they're significant, and obviously they impact the quality and useful life of our assets. The next slide just reminds
Commissioner,
you.
Commissioner, I think to asset preservation, Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, you just triggered a question. So based on us not passing a bill last year, how much more is it going to cost us, like, to do the same projects, basically? Do you have an idea?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't have a great estimate, perhaps Marianne does, but I think the obvious answer is construction costs and R&R would cost an estimated 20% more. But also when facilities get worse, in worse condition, then the costs also get worse. So as Commissioner Roberts Davis will talk about in her presentation on administration, the more we allow facilities to get into disrepair, the more expensive it is to bring them back up to a sort of accepted levels.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Showalter. Do you see some of the asset preservation? You know, we've got consolidation of staff going on where there may be fewer needs of our building infrastructure. Does some of the asset preservation go towards maybe upkeep and then closure or essentially disposal or disposition of buildings, like selling them off or you know, providing them for housing, or I'm just thinking of the massive number of buildings we have around the state. And is there any plan there for, because having an empty building, it could deteriorate quickly.
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, a wonderful question. I'm going to give you a brief answer, and I am pretty sure we're going to go into a more significant follow-up when the Department of Administration is up here, because they just completed a master plan, looking at our assets and trying to understand really sort of how we might deploy office space and other facilities, and thinking that through a multi-year process. So your question about consolidating, using our space differently is exactly where the conversation is at. I can speak as a commissioner of my own agency. You know, we're in the midst right now of consolidating space, trying to figure out how to shrink our footprint, use space differently, and I think that's going on across the enterprise. It's not going to be an easy or fast answer because of the number of constraints, including leases and multiple, you know, ownership of spaces. But that said, we're definitely underway.
Please proceed, Commissioner.
So I want to just, I sort of already made this point, but it's just like asset preservation, besides sort of the financial reasons, you know, we touched on it right already, is that it's just it's the right thing to do. And it's also just more expensive as you delay. And so I mentioned in the previous question, but this gives you some of the numbers of how it works, that over time the costs vary depending on the condition of the building. And so it is a factor for Minnesota. It's a factor for all public entities. And it's one of the factors that we discuss with our rating agencies when we talk about where's Minnesota, how does our bonding program work, and really what are we using these bond proceeds for. Moving ahead, there's a number of other themes in this recommendation that includes community inequity, which is about 16% of our total recommendation. And while every project in this recommendation will have positive impacts on local communities, this category highlights many of the projects that are requested by local units of government and benefit communities across the state. About $290 million of this is for projects like community centers and public spaces and public safety facilities in cities, towns, and counties. In addition, about $12 million is included for local governments, nonprofits, and tribal governments to construct and renovate early childhood facilities. And the governor's recommendations also dedicate a historic amount to equity, with a $200 million set aside to evaluate and select projects in the capital investment bill. On the next slide, about 14% of the recommendations for housing and homelessness. Housing infrastructure is just critical, and it's really a critical factor that the governor's recommendations continue to target. $250 million of this proposal is for housing infrastructure bonds, be used as a statewide resource and really address the shortage of affordable housing units. The recommendation also expands the use of housing infrastructure bonds to support the construction of multifamily rental housing for households with incomes at or below 50% of area median income, AMI. That varies by county. So, you know, as you know, that may be for a household of $37,500 to $52,800, depending where you're at for three people. But it's an important metric for access and making sure that we can really address needs across the state. In addition, $60 million is included for public housing rehabilitation to preserve existing public housing and keep it safe and healthy for residents. And ultimately, there's $100 million in cash for housing infrastructure, and $20 million for public housing rehab. Those are in the operating recommendations. Also included in this plan is $84 million for emergency shelter facility grants to local and tribal governments and their nonprofit partners. The next slide highlights environmental stewardship, a theme that comprises about 10% of the total recommendations. These are investments that conserve energy and invest in affordable renewables. Some examples of it are $12 million for a state building revolving loan fund to agencies to finance energy efficiency and water conservation improvement projects. Another $6 million for state building renewable energy production accounts that incorporate solar and wind and other renewable energy systems. And they also make investments to adapt and to prepare for increasingly extreme weather events. That would include $20 million for DNR's flood mitigation grants to local communities. That helps really construct levees and other infrastructure that reduce flood risk that costs more later. $24 million for PCA's local government stormwater construction grants. This is infrastructure not currently addressed by the PFA. And these recommendations also help Minnesotans just be better stewards of the land that we call home. $12 million for grants to local governments for composting and other programs. $37 million to fully fund the capital assistance program projects for counties that address solid waste and recycling facilities, and more. Going further, roads, bridges, water systems, additional parts of our infrastructure system are about 20% of these recommendations, and these really help us keep connected and keep moving and help our overall economy. The governor recommends $252 million in this area, in particular to repair local roads and bridges. The governor also recommends $80 million for high-priority trunk highway bridge projects, such as the bridge in this image, the Blahnik Bridge up in Duluth. And finally, $222 million for the Public Facilities Authority. And as you well know, that helps local communities address drinking water and maintain storm and wastewater infrastructure.
Commissioner, we have a question from Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know transportation is coming, but I'm just wondering if the Lafayette Bridge entanglement is in there, or if that's any planning or...
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm going to have MnDOT respond to that as to how it fits into the recommendations.
Please proceed.
The next slide just hits the other 2% of the recommendation, which is funds for bond sale expenses, other financing that just wasn't included in the other five categories. That would include user financing requirement for Ramp F's debt service in order to provide financial relief to the Department of Administration's parking fund. And so to Representative Hansen's earlier question about how to remove and how the change in use of office space, that speaks directly to that. It also includes funds for DEED and Met Council and DNR and public safety to administer local grants in the capital budget. So moving forward, I'm going to just talk about the financing of these recommendations. To summarize, we've got $1.9 billion in general obligation bonds and $1.4 billion made up from other funds such as appropriation bonds, trunk highway bonds, general fund cash, and totaling an amount of $3.3 billion. As this slide shows you, these different financing tools are sort of comprise that total amount, and each of them is really tailored towards the needs that are being used for. General obligation bonds have very strict and defined uses, and so those are really appropriate for some projects, whereas cash or trunk highway bonds are appropriate for other projects. And so as the committee looks forward, just know that each of these is really different and appropriate for certain uses and not appropriate for other uses. The governor's recommendations include $119 million less in GO bonds and $602 million more in general fund cash when compared to where we were in 2022. And this is really to stay within the debt capacity guidelines. The major drivers of this are the governor's release budget included $40 million in rural finance authority loans and $50 million in trunk highway bonds for IHA match. Both impact the debt capacity guidelines. And in general, all these projects cost more than they did last year. So as I started this whole presentation talking about inflation, the whole package just costs more. And so we had to, when we're bumping up into our debt guidelines, we had to find a different way to bridge that cost. And that bridge is really the cash that we included in these recommendations. Moving ahead, the debt service costs for bonds do extend beyond the next biennium. So know that this is a long-term investment. But this table shows the biennial impact of the governor's recommendations to the general fund and the trunk highway fund. General fund shows the cost above the November forecast, which assumed an $880 million bonding bill this session based on a 10-year historic average. The general fund impact is $957 million this biennium and $186 million next. Why is it so much in the front end? Well, it's because of those cash projects that I mentioned before. The trunk highway fund impact is $22 million this biennium and $30 million next biennium. There's no questions on these numbers. move ahead. The state's debt capacity guidelines help us to sort of guide our capital investment decisions. As I mentioned before, these are long-term decisions, so these guidelines give us a sense of where we're at. The first two measures show existing authorized debt against state personal income, and the third measures how quickly the state pays down its debt. The first two guidelines would permit a $3.5 billion package based on the state's strong personal income figures. However, to meet guideline three, by paying down debt quickly and preserving long-term debt capacity, governor's recommending a GO bonding package of about $2 billion. The recommendations, all of these, the governor's recommendations are within all three of these debt guidelines and preserve the ability to continue this program that happens in good years and bad budget years, high inflation years and low inflation years. It really is a program to make sure that we continue to invest in this infrastructure of the state. Comparing our where we're at versus other states, this slide just gives you a sense that the state has moderate debt levels compared to the other 50 states, as reviewed and reported by our rating agencies. You'll see here that Minnesota is the 22nd lowest in terms of debt service to revenues when compared to other states. Again, the state has a moderate debt level compared to other states, this time looking at total debt compared to personal income. Passage of the governor and lieutenant governor's recommendations today would not materially change how these debt levels compare to other states as well. Sometimes one thinks that, oh, this bonding bill is going to move us way up the line or way down the line. These are fairly stable and really assume that all states are continuing to proceed making these kinds of investments. As always, we have plenty of more materials. Information for the governor's recommendations are on the mn.gov website, /MMB under the budget category. Includes a listing of all the projects, summary descriptions of them, and further breakout for the committee and its consideration. With that, Mr. Chair, that concludes my prepared presentation. Happy to take any questions.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Showalter. Just wondering, you have the governor's new bonding proposals here. We are, as you are aware, because you're doing it with us, working on the bill that we did the framework of a year ago. I just wonder about duplication. For example, you had in the new proposal $20 million for flood mitigation. If, by chance, in the bill that's being prepared, we complete and passes, and if there were $20 million in there for flood mitigation, would that mean that that would then supplant what's here or substitute what's here? Would the new $20 million go away, and then would you put another one? How would that work?
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, a great question. And, how the legislature wants to pass bills, whether last year, this year, in multiple bills, is really your choice. We're seeking, for instance, that case, $20 million for that purpose. We've got a long list of priorities. I'm trying to walk through those. And, if they happen right away or if they happen at the end of session, means either one is good, as long as they happen, because we're really seeking funding at these levels for these programs. So to your question, if we were able to get some of these appropriations and projects moving right away, that's awesome. That would reduce the amount that the governor is seeking for other projects.
Representative Erdahl. Well,
thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Commissioner, thank you for that. That was my follow-up question was going to be, then does that help the total to be reduced? And you answered that, so thank you.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, so I've been asking about the, the increased costs and that sort of thing. So, and you mentioned material and labor, and having been on this committee for a few years, former Chair Hausman often said that there was cost related to not passing bills in just strictly financial, costing more with like Moody's and other things. So if we... are we seeing anything in regards to our bond rating or real cost of money, just that alone?
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, great question. There's a lot going on there.
Sorry.
Certainly Assistant Commissioner Jen Hassmer can comment or follow up later. There's a couple of things going on. Since we met last, one good thing is we've been upgraded to AAA. So, you know, we have what I would say is reached the appropriate level of credit ratings, where all three credit rating agencies say that Minnesota is among the best. Because of our debt portfolio, because of our long-term outlook, because of our sort of patient, appropriate, sort of serious long-term management of capital investments and the risks that come around it. On the other hand, interest rates have gone up. So to your question, you know, the interest rate environment is very different than it was just a year ago. Right now, I believe the interest rates for these types of bonds would be above 4%, where a couple of years ago it would be more like, or a year ago it would be more on 2%. So that is, those things change. And as I mentioned, even at the release of the governor's budget a year ago, you know, we should be doing it regardless of the interest rate. You know, we can't guess what the interest rate's going to be in August, but we can decide what our needs are, move on a long-term process, and make sure that we're appropriate. So there are some costs. Absolutely, the delay has cost us some. And, you know, but hopefully right now the interest rates are not going to keep on going up.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, thank you. It's always good to hear that our bond rating is doing so well. And so I have another quick question, if that's all right, Mr. Chair. So if, given you showed like the assets and the kind of the quality or the where buildings are at, good, fair, excellent, all that, if we were to get crazy and go to Connecticut level, in Connecticut, do they have roofs falling down still, or are they, you know, what happens in Connecticut or Hawaii or Massachusetts? You know, these other states, you know, if we were to push beyond and just, you know, fully fund these for, say, the next 5 years, which I think we can with good leadership that we have going now.
So. Commissioner Showalter.
Chair, Representative, I'll start an answer. If Marianne has anything to add, we'll go there. I mean, I think a couple of things here. One is, I'm sure they still have some bad roofs. I think the important thing here is the how we direct our funds, how we sort of continue on a regular basis. Because it's not just the authorization level, it's the ability to execute and get it done. So the materials, the labor, the planning, all of those things are real constraints. And so this is a kind of a problem on the asset preservation that we're just going to need to address routinely with diligence and consistency over a period of time. I don't think we, you know, even if we borrowed a whole lot or authorized a huge chunk, we wouldn't really be able to use it because this is the kind of thing that it's going to take a time to whittle away at.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner.
Members, any additional questions for Commissioner Showalter before we move on? Seeing none, thank you, Commissioner. Next up on the agenda is Department of Transportation. Welcome, Commissioner Dobenberger. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nancy Dobenberger. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Transportation. Thank you for letting us provide a little detail on the transportation portion of the budget. So just to set the stage a little bit here, Minnesota has the fourth largest roadway system in the nation. And in the current biennium, the 22-23 biennium, we have 360 construction projects in the program. As we look out for planned investments for state highways over the next 20 years, as we're updating our Minnesota State Highway Investment Plan, we are looking at $30 to $33 billion in planned investments. The range is due to somewhat uncertainty in revenues, so we're expressing the revenues as a range that we plan to invest. We're in the process of updating that plan. And just a little bit more than roads and bridges, of course, of what MnDOT does. We support 7 active ports, 3 are Lake Superior, 4 Mississippi River ports, 34 transit providers serving all 80 non-metro counties, so that's Greater Minnesota Transit Services, 133 publicly owned state-funded airports, and 4,420 track miles serving 21 railroad companies. So on the IIJA, that provides $4.8 billion over 5 years in federal highway funding, formula funding for roads and bridges to the state of Minnesota. And so that's about a 30% increase in the state's highway formula funding, which is about a 20% increase for existing core programs, plus some new programs, the Carbon Reduction Protect Program, bridges, electric vehicle charging infrastructure, to name a few. And the next list here on your slides does name some of those programs, but a few of the largest ones, and these are dollar amounts that are available nationally. But for the infra program, that's infrastructure for rebuilding America, there is $14 billion now as a part of that program available nationally. The RAISE program, rebuilding America infrastructure with sustainability and equity, $7.5 billion. And the bridge investment program is another large program. So that's in addition to the formula funds that come to us, the federal dollars for bridges, another $12.5 billion available nationally. And I'll just say we have been successful as the state of Minnesota going after some of these discretionary funds for new programs. And so that's encouraging. Next slide. So as we talk about what we need for state or local match to these federal dollars, this next slide lists some of those. So the top line there, the Federal Highway Administration programs, MnDOT has a federal fund coming to us about $170 million per year. That's additional federal funds that came to us through this new bill, the IIJA. And so we need additional $40 million in match, assuming about a 20% match, which is typical for most of those programs. But then also, the next line talks there about the local agencies also needing additional match for the additional federal dollars coming their way. And then also the FAA, the FTA has additional programs with additional match needs too. And the top line on the slide there is in red. That notes that we do need the additional budget authority from the state legislature to be able to spend the increased appropriations, and really appreciate that bills to provide us that spending authority are moving through the legislative committees and floors. Also wanted to note on the slide, since it came up during Commissioner Showalter's presentation, the $50 million in the governor's operating proposal, that's trunk highway bonds, that would go toward this too. So that was called out as where is that 50 that is part of the operating proposal. And as I noted just a moment ago, we have been doing well in some programs. Some of the other programs we aren't going to do well as a state, just simply since we aren't as big in other modes potentially as other states. But again, very excited to continue to go after these discretionary funds. Next slide. And so here is the list of items for the governor's recommended capital budget. I'll hit on the first three lines here particularly, but take questions certainly on any of these. So the first line talks about our high priority bridges. And really on this budget, these details, this is basically the same as last year's governor's budget proposal. However, it is, as noted earlier, increased about 20% to account for construction cost increases. But on the high priority bridges, that's $80 million in trunk highway bonds is the proposal. A question came up about the Lafayette Bridge, and some operational changes were made out there, but I know there's a study going on that is to conclude around the end of this year to look at different alternatives for operational improvements at the north end of the Lafayette Bridge. The Lafayette Bridge was not included in this $80 million. This was really to get at existing needs on existing bridges that are coming down the pike. Potentially operational issues for the north end of the bridge are yet to be determined as part of that study. But there's a little asterisk by some of these, and what that notes is these dollars could also be used as discretionary grant matches as they come along. So the top line is for trunk highway bridges, those on the state system for which we have many needs. And then also the next line, the local bridge replacement program, general obligation bonds, and $144 million is what we have for that. And the local road improvement program, $108 million. So that's for our local agencies, those two roads and bridges that need improvements or replacements and to get at much of the needs on our local system. I will also mention, back to the idea of bridges going after discretionary grants, I also wanted to note the one that we were not successful in that we learned of recently was in the way of the IIJA Bridge Investment Program, or BIP program as we call it, for large bridges. Commissioner Showalter had mentioned the Blatnik Bridge. That is one that we need a significant amount of funding. It's going through a scoping study right now. We were not successful going after discretionary dollars this year, jointly with the state of Wisconsin, since that's a border bridge, shared ownership. However, since I heard there were at least 40 applications and only four got funded, there was a large amount of money to those who were awarded funds. So that is encouraging for certainly future applications for us, and we do intend to apply for funds in the additional years of the program. And one other thing I wanted to call your attention to on this list, at the end of the list of the recommendations, you'll see rail corridor capacity improvements. That rail corridor is for the corridor from Minneapolis to Duluth, and that's for projects to prepare for NLX, or Northern Lights Express, and it could go towards, of course, the improvements could go towards improving freight rail along that corridor, or any future projects to also to address safety crossing issues in that corridor. So it's stated more generally, but yes, that is indeed the NLX route.
Commissioner, I have a question. Can you speak to, if we have legislatively named grants for either a road or bridge, would they qualify for the two programs that we have on here? So if the legislature name a program and having appropriations for that, can they then come back and apply through the bridge program or the road program?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that question. So if a specific project is identified for funding in legislation, I think your question is, can we still go after discretionary grant funding?
Through the local roads and local bridge program, yes.
Yes, I do not see why there would be an issue with that. Certainly, they're going to need match dollars as they go to pursue the discretionary grants. And so if there were dollars identified for a specific project, I don't see that being a problem. I will say, though, MnDOT does not support earmarks. We'd rather the funding come to the programs and then work through the priority list that way. But this is the local road program, I think, or bridge program you're referring to.
Yep. Thank you. Please proceed.
And that was it, I believe, for what I was going to talk about today, but happy to stand for questions.
Members, any questions for the commissioner before we move on to the next agency? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand about the no earmarks, but you know, in other areas with the IIJA, we could put in criteria to encourage projects in environmental justice areas. Is that applicable with transportation projects as well?
Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen. Yes, I will say the IIJ program has priorities around, as noted with some of these newer programs they have with the federal bill, climate resiliency, as well as equity, advancing equity, and carbon reduction. So any funding toward programs such as those would certainly be in line with spending in this program.
I see no other questions. Thank you, Commissioner, for coming before us.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda, Department of Administration. Welcome, Commissioner Roberts Davis. Please identify yourself and proceed with your presentation.
Good afternoon, Chair Lee and members. For the record, I am Alice Roberts Davis. I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Administration. I'm joined by our Legislative Director, Julie Byrol, this afternoon. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here and present to you the capital budget recommendations from the governor. Before I jump in, I would like to take just a moment to highlight the importance of asset preservation and taking care of what we already have. I'm bringing back a chart that you saw from Commissioner Showalter, and I wanted to just share with you that the governor has recommended 38% of his $3.3 billion funding bill to fund state agency asset preservation projects. Asset preservation has become an increasingly important challenge for state agency operations, and adequately maintaining state facilities is imperative for supporting the efficient and effective delivery of services and programs to Minnesotans. Asset preservation funding provides improved safety and better government while protecting state investments in the following ways. First, it maintains our property stewardship and ensures that employees and the public and custodial individuals are kept safe and that functional needs are optimally met. It also allows for the timely planned preventive maintenance and reduces the total cost of ownership, eventually freeing up resources for core program functions. Excuse me. The cost to maintain a building is cheaper than the cost to repair it. And in addition, it also saves time and disruption for tenant operations, and that cost savings is immeasurable. The green line on the graph that you see highlights the cost per square foot to repair our state-owned buildings, depending on the building condition. And the blue bar graph also shows the percent of state-owned buildings within each building category. Addressing some of the backlog and remaining current on repairs is efficient budgeting because it costs more to fix breaks and respond to emergencies than to fund plant upkeep. Funding asset preservation requests saves energy and reduces greenhouse gases. Modern, properly operating buildings use less energy and water, making agency buildings more operationally efficient while reducing our energy costs. To help illustrate the critical need to fund agency asset preservation requests, think about the following things that you see before you. First, the state of Minnesota owns over 4,900 buildings spread across 19 state agencies. This adds up to more than 34 million square feet. The buildings have a replacement value of $9.8 billion, and the average age of these buildings is 41 years of age, with 42% of our buildings over the age of 40. Mm-hmm. We've also calculated that the deferred maintenance on these buildings is about $1.9 billion. Recent asset preservation funds have been used for replacing and repairing HVAC systems and water heaters, updating building controls and security systems, replacing elevators, windows, and roofs for buildings that need them. So now, moving into the governor's capital budget recommendations, our proposals will assist in the state's service to Minnesotans, as well as our ability to recruit and retain the state's future hybrid workforce on the Capitol complex. The capital budget presents an opportunity to help harness the energy to fight climate change while making our operations more efficient. In his 2023 bonding recommendations, the governor has included strategies to reduce energy and water use in our state government operations. Additionally, we are focused on investing in the future of the Capitol complex. These aren't going to be new proposals, but they are dollars for bolstering Capitol complex security, removing failing facilities, and improving the accessibility of owned and leased buildings. First, the governor recommends permanently relieving the state parking fund of the obligation to pay the debt service for Ramp F. The requirement that the debt service be covered by user fees and the parking fund has plagued the parking fund for years. This issue has been made exponentially worse during the pandemic because we saw a large reduction in the number of parking contracts and reduced meter usage. Without relief, parking rates on the Capitol complex are estimated to increase at least 60% to cover the shortfall, with state employees and visitors bearing that burden. The increase would push state parking rates well beyond the market rate average in the area, And if parking contracts are not sustainable for current parkers, then the long-term stability of the parking options on the Capitol complex will be at risk. The debt service for most bonding projects is covered by the general fund, and this change would align the debt service for Ramp F with other typical bonding projects. Next, the governor recommends $2.1 million in general obligation bonds and $6.9 million from the general fund for a total of $9 million for CAPRA. CAPRA is the Capital Asset Preservation and Replacement Account, and these dollars fund emergencies and hazardous materials abatement for state buildings. This program ensures that state facilities which experience unanticipated emergencies are quickly operational again, and that construction projects are not unduly delayed if there are hazardous materials discovered. As an example of the type of work that CAPRA funds, you'll see on the right when a pipe burst in the state office building a few years back, the water pooled on the floor and waste bins were set up to catch the leaks, and CAPRA dollars could be used in that type of scenario. Next, we have two proposals to provide resources to state agencies to make their operations more efficient. First, the governor recommends $12 million from the general fund to add to the revolving loan fund to finance energy efficiency and water conservation improvements in state agencies throughout Minnesota. These improvements lead to more efficient state buildings and reduced energy costs. This fund was established in 2021 with dollars from the renewable development account. However, the funds are directed to give preference for use on buildings that are located within the Xcel Energy Service territory. So we're requesting additional funds for insurance that funds are available for all state buildings throughout the state. The governor also recommends $6 million from the general fund for renewable energy investments at state-owned facilities. We have an abundant, cost-effective renewable energy resources, including wind, solar, and biomass, but due to technology advances, solar and wind energy costs are decreasing rapidly. However, agencies often lack the upfront capital that they need to add renewable energy generation and storage systems to state-owned buildings. So this proposal would make those funds available to them to make those types of investments.
Commissioner, before you proceed, Representative Hansen, Franson has a question. Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, with the state building and fleet sustainability and efficiencies, little screenshot there. Is any of this money going toward expanding charging stations?
Commissioner.
Chair Lee, Representative, this is not for charging stations. There are separate funds available for charging stations throughout the state.
Representative Franson. Please proceed, Commissioner.
We have a few proposals to invest in the future of state-owned and leased buildings. First, the governor recommends $4.4 million in general obligation bonds to complete the demolition of the Ford building and prepare the site for redevelopment. This includes removing all hazardous materials and stabilizing the site with landscaping features until authorization for funding for a replacement building is obtained. The building has been vacant since 2004 due to deterioration and the need for major repairs. It is located on prime real estate across from the light rail station and is connected to the Capitol Tunnel system. The fiscally responsible thing for us to do is demolish this building because its annual upkeep has already accrued over $1 million in taxpayer debt, and the envelope of the building does need to be stabilized, which will be an additional $300,000. Next, the governor recommends $40.3 million in general obligation bonds and $15.7 million from the general fund to implement the remaining security upgrades recommended by the Advisory Committee on Capital Area Security. These upgrades were identified in the 2013 physical security study and recent security assessment update. The $10 million appropriated in 2018 for security has been much appreciated across the Capitol complex. However, there are still vulnerabilities that we'd like to address, and we'd like to make sure that buildings are secure. Finally, the governor recommends $1.2 million from the general fund to establish the centralized funding source to correct physical barriers in state-owned and state-leased buildings. By improving the physical access to state government facilities, this program will enhance the public's physical access to buildings and employment opportunities, and also improve the independence and productivity of Minnesotans with disabilities. In summary, here is an overview of the governor's capital budget recommendations for admin. I hope that this presentation shows you that we have well thought out and well reasoned ideas and budget requests, and they each address a key need for the enterprise. Thank you for the opportunity to present, and I'll stand for any questions that you have.
Members, any questions for the commissioner? Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner. After the Ford building is demolished, are there any plans for that location?
Commissioner.
Chairly, Representative Erdahl, there are no plans currently for new construction there at this point in time. We would just stabilize the site. We would make it pad ready. We would landscape and make sure that there's access to the tunnel that's below, but there would not be an actual building on that site.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So it'll just be an open space there.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, yes, it would just be green space at this time.
Thank you. So my thought of dormitory housing for legislators will never happen there.
Commissioner.
Surely not at this time, Representative.
Members, any additional questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and back to the Ford building. So when we demolish old buildings, and I understand the need for demolishing them, is there any opportunity for salvage? Do you provide, you know, if people wanted to collect the bricks rather than putting them into a landfill, or the carved stonework, you know, is there a salvage option where people would pay for that?
Commissioner.
Chairly, Representative, I don't know that there'll be salvage options available. I know that there's quite a plan for sustainably removing the building at this point in time, and oftentimes sustainable removal does include reuse and salvaging those materials.
Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I'm sorry, I should have done a follow-up on my charging station, but I was just kind of wondering, what is the fund that you spoke about, and then what is the plan for increasing charging stations?
Commissioner.
Chair Lee. Chair Lee, Representative, we did have appropriation bonds in 2020 for the charging stations. It's a little over $1 million, I believe, and there is an extensive plan that we're developing with our Office of Enterprise Sustainability on where those charging stations will be located near and around the Capitol complex.
Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What was the name of that fund you said?
Commissioner.
Chair Lee, it's appropriation bonding from the 2020 appropriation.
Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So no specific fund per se.
Not a specific.
Okay.
Members, any additional questions for the Department of Administration before we move on? Seeing none, thank you, Commissioner Roberts-Davis, for coming by. Next on the agenda, Department of Veterans, Commissioner Hierke is here. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner. Please identify yourself and proceed with your presentation. Please proceed, Commissioner.
Thank you, Shirley. For the record, I'm Larry Hierke. I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm here today to present the governor's recommendation for the 2023 capital investment request for Veterans Affairs. Just as a reminder, a mission of my agency is to support the veterans, their dependents, and survivors. We do this by connecting them with their federal and state care and benefits that they've earned. And right now we have about 300,000 veterans in the state of Minnesota. We're located throughout the state of Minnesota. We currently have veterans homes in Fergus Falls, Hastings, Laverne, Minneapolis, and Silver Bay. We have three homes that are currently under construction at about 70 to 80% completion now, thanks to the legislature and the federal VA. Those future homes are in Bemidji, Montevideo, and Preston. We have three operating cemeteries in Duluth, Little Falls, and Preston. And we have a cemetery in Redwood County, which is actually currently under construction at 70% completions also. We're located in several other office locations to include the Veterans Service Building, the Whipple Building, and if you counted all locations we spend one day in as an office, we're in 55 different communities throughout Minnesota. We have two bonding requests. The first bonding request is for $77.77 million. And that's considered a state share to replace the state facility at the Minnesota Veterans Home, which is our domiciliary program in Hastings, Minnesota. We came in to be in possession of this this location in 1978. We provide domiciliary care for our veterans. Currently, the home serves that home and another annex location serves 148 veterans. The domiciliary care provides mental, chemical, and medical support for veterans who require less than skilled care. So this is not skilled care, but it's providing daily meals, providing a place for them to sleep at night, and then providing these additional services in support of the veterans that are there. Next slide. Where are we located? Just east of Highway 61. We're just across the Vermilion River there, in a very nice place in Hastings, Minnesota. It's near the old mill, if anyone knows about Hastings history. Next slide. Long history here. The current building, the base building, was built in 1902. It was the insane asylum for the hopelessly insane. I don't know how they got 1,100 patients into that first area, but somehow they did it. They actually had a farm that was part of this and a cemetery. The building itself has more additions, and as you can see here, year after year, it's kept adding on to the main building, which is building 2023. We came in possession of this site in 1978, and recent renovations were done in 80, 93, and 2000. Most of those were safety and code review items. We do lease two outbuildings, or two buildings that are not associated with our process. We lease them to the Cochrane Recovery Services. Those buildings also are beyond their life cycle and need significant help and assistance. And during my time here in 20 and 21, I've been in building 25, trying to beat back the fungal growth and mold observed in the area. That building itself was never designed to have air exchanges in the building. It only has air exchanges actually in the hallway because it's the only space that allows for it. But we were able to get the fungal growth and mold taken care of for the moment, but is less than optimal in those locations. I can tell you the HVAC system is about the same as what you'd see in a Motel 8, except for it's about 30 years older than what you see. So it's a window type situation. We're actually making the parts now to keep them operational. I did fund a capital improvement study, which is the basis of this request in 2022. We want to resolve a few issues. We got six buildings that are beyond the useful life. There's 20 buildings total on campus. We have deferred maintenance of $18.6 million. This was in 2021. I can tell you it's higher than that today. The domiciliary space, our program space, is in three separate buildings and requires veterans to actually go across the state highway to get to breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and it's uphill to get there. Physical security, because of all the additions, is very difficult to maintain, to establish to begin with and maintain. And the campus has very few SB 2030 or B3 upgrades to it. We've been trying to keep ahead of the required safety items. As part of the study, as you can see on the bottom there, I did ask them to provide a renovation versus replacement, and they said due to numerous building deficiencies, to invest in upgrading and renovating these buildings is not a good use of funds. So that was their surmise, their summary as it related to doing a renovation for the site. There you can see the master plan study. Originally, I thought I could do this as a phased project. What I found out is because of the fact you have to work around the veterans and so forth, it will be somewhat phased in its the way it lays out. But it, once it starts, I must continue to go through in order to keep everything functioning. But we do have a master plan. We want to make sure that we have the best approach for the residents and for the overall campus experience. So, the best solutions for us going forward for the domiciliary program is to provide even access with limited mobility for all of our veterans. Right now, we actually have to put very mobile veterans in that building 25 because they have to physically get across that highway. When I had a sensing session with all the veterans, the only question they had for me, will I have a private room and will I have a private bath? Right now there's two people to a room. There's a curtain between the two people. The room is not large. And the bathroom is down the hall. We'd be able to significantly increase the sustainability. I could lower operating costs. Physical security would be possible to do in a new building. And we'd be able to improve campus safety due to equipment, elevators, workspaces, and bringing everything up to build the new building codes. And the biggest thing is all program spaces would be in one building. Next slide. Our recommendation is to demolish five buildings, including 23, which is the main building, 24, which is the administrative building, and 25, which is that building with that had problems with the mold and fungus. And we replace those with one building. The project timeline is actually 42 months, so it's a significantly long project timeline. It requires demolition of buildings to start, give space for the new building, and then again, keeping the veterans housed and fed throughout this entire time. Here's a little bit of a laydown for where we are. The main building is the one right there in the middle of your packet. The building I was talking about that's across the highway is in the green space at the top of the slides. And our intent here would be a phased approach where we take down a couple of those cottages I'm currently leasing, 1 and 2, in the administrative building 24 in front. And we start a process of step-by-step working around the veterans, keeping them housed as we go forward. Next slide. You can see here as we build in the new building, we would eliminate building 25. We'd be able to consolidate our administrative services into other existing buildings, and we'd start building the new building in front of building 23. Next slide. This is sort of the way it would look as far as massing. A total of, I think, with the basement where the support functions are, it's six levels. And again, it's sort of on the hillside, so it would be built into the hillside. The entryway would go from the front of the building, which right now you have to go up, I think it's 34 steps to get up to the front desk or go to the elevator to your left. You would come in on the main floor in the back is the way we anticipate it. Next slide. Here's a look from bird's eye view of one of the, I think like level three, which was that demonstrates 18 resident units per household and two households per level. This would be a great space for them. As you can see, there's spaces to congregate, spaces to have events, and kitchenette. The kitchenette has two functions. For some of our veterans, we're actually returning them back to society so they learn how to cook. So it's a two-part situation there. It has screen porches, meeting areas, and other areas that they can meet with their mental health provider or other individuals here on each floor. Next slide. And this gives you an idea at the end with the town center being added at the very end, the main entryway coming in to the back of the building, and then there would be a small vehicle storage garage that would be just to the right side of the picture here. We do envision some solar, probably not enough to offset all the electrical demand here, but some solar here, and we also are going to do geothermal as part of this. That's the large green area where building 25 used to be across the road. Next slide. So in summary, it's $77.77 million required is the state share for pre-design, design, demolition, and construction. We would seek authority then to request $144 million from the federal VA under their modernization project costs. This would be replacing existing spaces, so we'd be in a higher priority than if this was a new construction like we were for our homes that we just recently got. So their chances for us being picked up earlier would be much higher, and especially when we can say that the building that we're replacing is 120 years old, there'll probably be a little bit more focus towards action on this particular request for the federal VA. Next slide.
So, Commissioner, I have a question for this request. If we were to appropriate the $78 million for the agency sometime this year, knowing that the project is going to take about 42 months, do you anticipate needing to come back to the legislature for further appropriations in the future?
Chair Lee, I do not at this point. I think as long as it gets picked up by the federal government within 2 years, which I believe there's a very good chance based on some of the most recent bills that have passed on the federal level, I think there will be adequate funding to do that, and I think the funding that we have here, I think, is the Department of Administration has advised me the inflation costs that they have anticipated, so this is well beyond what's in my study, but based on the we based our request on the mid-construction of the 42 months plus the 2 years, so that's why it's a little bit higher than, you know, what I would think it would normally take, but because of the fact that midpoint of construction is quite a ways into the future, that's the reason for the $78 million and the request.
Thank you, Commissioner. Please proceed.
Second, the priority area is 12.36 for asset preservation. Throughout our homes, we've done a great job, and besides the domicile, we've done a great job of working on the resident spaces. There are still a lot of areas that need focus, as I mentioned, for the domicile. Besides the Hastings space, there is an annex in Building 16 on Minneapolis campus, and I'd like to talk to that just a little bit here. So Building 16 is a building that was built in 1973. It currently has quite a few issues with it. The roof elevators, we've had water actually in the roof. Because of the roof, I believe we've got water into the elevators. So hydraulic systems that are in there are original to the building. They also are significant damage due to the water that's there. The HVAC systems, are mostly original to the building, and therefore they're beyond their useful life. The windows, some of them were replaced, but not all of them. And the security system is old and needs to be updated. I would be going to a card system with that, with a more of a true front desk type situation. The nurse's station needs to be upgraded because of privacy. It didn't take into consideration veteran privacy or resident privacy when it was built. And then lighting, of course, we converted to LED. Next slide. Right now, this is for the balance of the funding then. So why don't we go back one, this one. So the 7 point, I do have $3 million dedicated to this project right now. I knew that it wasn't going to be enough. I need the $7.8 million to complete the Building 16. We have completed preliminary design is complete on this, and they're actually working on the actual completion of the design as a whole right now. So I feel confident in the numbers, but 7.8 is the amount I need in order to move this along. This is shovel ready, and this will be ready to go. I am going to get the final brief on this at the end of February, so I'll be ready to execute on this very quickly. Next slide. The balance of the funding for my request is for backlog asset preservation. There are many smaller projects that require the attention of these dollars. And most of the items for this additional 4.56 are either to meet code requirements or safety in many locations throughout Minnesota. And I know one of the big ones is 1994, the maintenance bay at Little Falls at the cemetery is one place where I need a lot of attention. But there are other locations for which this money would go to also. Next slide. And with that, Chair and Committee, I'm open for any questions you might have.
Representative Lilly and then Representative Erdahl. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. Just want to thank you for having many of us down to Hastings. Mm-hmm. The Chair Lee and former Representative Juergens, I think, organized it, and it was really a great day, and I thought about it often, and the need is great, as you've mentioned, and so thank you for that. I just want to say that just generally, through my experience, you've been good stewards of the money that you received, and thank you for that, and then that you've also done a good job with getting matches, which is always impressive, and it's just more comment than, but good work.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. How many residents are there in Hastings, and what is their average age?
Commissioner?
Chair Lee, Representative Erdahl, currently there's 123 veterans at Hastings, and the average age, I don't know what the average is. I know the youngest one, I believe, is 53, and the oldest one that's there is in his 90s somewhere, so there's a significant area. I know in our long-term care, the average age is 82 years old, but in the domiciliary, I would think it would be just a little bit younger than that.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Ms. Chair and Commissioner. Do you have the total number of veterans that are housed in Minnesota facilities?
Commissioner.
Chair Lee, Representative Erdahl, the current number is just below 700 that we have housed in all the long-term care and domiciliary. We're down about 20% due to COVID. It really hit our staffing. We had significant amount of people that retired that were at that time. There had a lot of other people that decided this was not for them, that long-term care during COVID was not what they wanted to do long-term. So we had a lot of departures, and therefore, as we had some losses and so forth in our census, we've balanced the census to balance for the number of staff that I currently have. My intent over the next 2 years is to get back from where we are today, which is at 75% of sense of our maximum capacity, to 95%, which is sort of the industry standard. That will help also with my operational budget going forward.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you.
Commissioner, just to that point, then, if you were to get to 95% capacity, what is the rough number for us of veterans that you could take?
Chair Lee, if I got to 95%, I think that puts me with the new homes. I believe it's right at 1,000 or near 1,000. It might be just a hair over, but right at 1,000, I would say, would be the number.
Thank you, Commissioner. Members, any questions for the Commissioner? Seeing that, thank you, Commissioner, for coming by today, and thank you to all the other Commissioners for presenting on your budget requests. And then, Representative Erdahl, can I have a motion now that we have quorum to approve the minutes for January 25th?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move approval of the minutes from January 25th, 2023, and I think they were particularly good. Your LA should be complimented.
Thank you, Representative. Members, any discussions on the minutes for January 25th? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Members, so for Thursday, we will be having commissioners from the following agencies: the Department of Human Services, Public Safety, Pollution Control Agency, DEET, and Department of Corrections. With no further business before us, this meeting is adjourned.